Mike Zuzulo, President, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Mike, I want to talk about the influence the coronavirus outbreak has had on the commodities, but I guess I really want to drill down into crops and really corn and kind of where prices are, where you see prices going. But I guess generally speaking, and I know from reading some of your commentary and talking to other analysts, if nothing else, the coronavirus outbreak has certainly impacted the global economy.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I think, Mark, the agriculture commodities, they have to follow, in essence, in sympathy with pullbacks and equities, in my opinion. And there's two major reasons for this. When you look at the price action in the medium term since the financial crisis and since more of the financialization of commodities, all asset classes are more closely tied together. And so a rising tide lifts all boats and a sinking tide sinks all boats as well. And so especially when China and Asia are concerned and the spotlight and the footprint of this disease is in China and spreading throughout all of Asia at this stage, I think this is our global growth engine, and therefore the commodity trade especially is going to be hypersensitive to that. Now, the second thing I would say, and probably more important to the short term, important to going into spring, important to producers who may have basis contracts and have not locked the futures side in and maybe have March basis contracts that maybe have to be rolled now because of the price decay that we've seen in the corn and beans, is I think the commodities following the equities more than this recent go-around is a result of last week and USDA's Agricultural Outlook Forum, as well as President Trump's communication through Twitter. What I'm talking about specifically is USDA said their phase one trade deal was not incorporated into their baseline projections. They gave the commodities and the ag sector, us analysts, a $14 billion figure to work from when it comes to U.S. ag exports to China, instead of the phase one trade deal number of $40 to $50 billion. Then they commented that they didn't think that the coronavirus was hurting any of the potential in the U.S. ag sector. So it left us questioning on Thursday when those two comments were made and those two projections were made by the chief economist. Then President Trump tweeted on Friday that another potential MFP payment would be coming to farmers in 2020 if China or our other trading partners didn't meet their trade agreement levels of purchases. And so to me, that really felt like, and I think the rest of the market, it felt like kind of a confirmation and an acknowledgement that we were not getting the necessary volume that we needed. And I think that in and of itself left us very vulnerable to outside market influences when we came in this week.
Do you think that's indicative entirely because of the coronavirus outbreak and the impact it has had on China, or given the fact that we didn't know many specifics about phase one when the announcement was made, that even without the outbreak scenario playing itself out right now, that the fact that China claimed they could purchase, you know, $40 to $50 billion worth of U.S. ag goods was such a lofty figure to begin with that reality is setting in a little bit?
Yes, I think that's exactly the majority of the reason. And if you put the kind of the icing on the cake of that logic, it was the idea that we've been fighting with these trade agreements and the trade negotiations for upwards of 2 years. And you can see very pretty clearly, very associated with these trade negotiations, the change in the dollar trend when the dollar strengthened, when negotiations were going poorly, especially when it came to NAFTA and when it came to U.S.-China trade negotiations and even Japan trade negotiations. For a time, you saw the dollar spike and you saw the commodity markets give up and move back into a deflationary mindset. And I think that's what attracted a lot of the equity money into the U.S. dollar, U.S. bonds, U.S. assets like stocks. And I think that's what we're unraveling at this point.
Now, as you look at marketing corn here in the next few weeks and months as we prepare for the spring planting season, and I think an anticipation that we're going to see delays just because of the amount of moisture already, and that's not even factoring in what could be another wet spring for key regions of the Corn Belt. You've got the coronavirus and the trade uncertainty continuing, maybe South America, but certainly as we move further into this year, weather in the U.S. is going to play a key part. So how do you navigate through all that?
Well, this is where I think you watch the cash market and the basis levels the most closely, because we are seeing some divergence, and I think they're important divergences when it comes to hard red wheat and when it comes to corn specifically, where the cash markets are showing a lot tighter supplies through a much stronger basis. And I think especially as you get east of the Mississippi River, that's where you're going to find more spots, I think, Mark, where you see a bigger potential for a recovery in corn prices. I think USDA did a very good job last week in their presentation by the chief economist talking about the new crop cash corn basis versus new crop bean basis in the acreage base, and that's why the corn acreage base gained versus the soybean acreage base. I think they also did something that I was very thankful for because it matched up with my own analysis, and that is the global stocks to use ratios. The supply left over after demand is truly going down pretty substantially in the case of coarse grains and in the case of corn. We're looking at the lowest levels for both in 5 years, essentially since 2013, 2014 marketing area. So these two things, I think, point me in the direction that corn, while it may not have the upside potential in the short term until we get through some of these issues and face some of these demand issues with coronavirus more specifically, we still have 16% of the crop left from last year that's unharvested, and this is why our basis is doing well in some key areas, and I think that's not going to go away. And so my mindset is, while the corn may not have a big jump until we get through the coronavirus mindset, we also probably have limited downside. And at some point in time, and I think that time period is within the next 30 days, essentially before we get into the acreage report at the end of March, the trade's going to need to come back around to what we have for world corn supplies and what we have for available U.S. corn supplies and match that up. And I think that's the issue that the trade still has to deal with, that they continue to put off until the resurvey by USDA is put out. But I think they're going to have to deal with that maybe before the resurvey is published.
What about the announcement from China about reducing tariffs? I think ethanol is believed to be included in that. And so as we wait and wait on more specifics about the phase one trade deal, it seems like we're getting a little more light shed on the ethanol situation, which as we've talked about before, China shows great potential for U.S. ethanol as an export market. So I would think that from a demand perspective, that is friendly.
Yes, I think you're right. I think you also want to keep a very close eye on the DDGs and also the sorghum. We actually did sell some sorghum in the weekly export sales to China last week. And I think the number one indicator for whether China is going to buy our product still remains in the pork sector. And we just got a brand new report from the U.S. Meat Export Federation, and I believe it was the CEO talking about that. And he said essentially in quotes, "We look forward to continued success in 2020 when it comes to pork, U.S. pork going to China." He even mentioned coronavirus and that situation being concerning and disruptive, but he said it hasn't dampened our enthusiasm for the potential this market holds for U.S. red meat. That those last few words were in quotes by them. I think, Mark, when you look at the fact that USDA themselves last week showed that the consumption of the Chinese consumption domestically is going to be short almost 16 million tons for pork, and the exports that we can ship out and other countries can ship out, even if we ramp up strongly, is going to be around 11 million tons. That still leaves them over almost 5 million tons short of domestic consumption needs. And this is up against already having almost 21% food price inflation. So the easiest way for China to cool their price inflation is to import more pork and beef. And so I really do look for 2020 to be more of a protein-led market as far as a demand low when it comes to the grains. And obviously, that will help the meal, that will help the corn, will help the DDGs, and it will help the sorghum as well if that all comes together.
Last thing I have for you, Mike, and it's hard to answer this, I'm sure, but your best guess, if you will, on the duration of this coronavirus outbreak overhanging the market, and as it continues to spread, there's really no telling when officials are going to have control of it, that it's going to be something that is being taken care of. But if you were to guess as to when we could see that negative factor not being such a negative factor to U.S. ag commodities, what's realistic?
I think in my mind, Mark, when I listen to the scientists from the NIH and other scientists and doctors, it really boils down to Mother Nature and a warm-up and springtime weather coming to really put this disease and this potential pandemic off to the side for a time and give us a chance to come up with the vaccine. So I'm going to say when the weather warms up, that's when I'll feel a lot better. When it comes to the economic side and the commodity demand hit or no hit, I really am looking at the mortality rate more than anything, because if we don't have a high mortality rate, China can come out of this and keep their demand base intact. It'll just be moved 2 or 3 months from the first quarter down into the second or third quarters as far as I am concerned and what I'm looking at from a standpoint of their overall growth, their overall commodity demand. But I think the last thing that they would want to give up in terms of demand because of this virus is their food demand, because of their inflationary levels. And I'll leave you with this statistic. In Sichuan and some of these key areas where pork is produced, you're looking at in Shanghai, places like that, you're looking at pork prices literally $6 to $8 a pound right now. And that's after the Chinese have thrown a lot of domestic stocks onto the market. And that's after seeing about 3 to 4 million tons of imports go into China, depending on what numbers you look at. That's still not cooling off the inflationary situation for them, and it's because their 40% loss in pork production is 20% of the world's loss in pork production. This is a number we just can't get our heads around. So when I look at coronavirus, I have to put that up against the idea that they have such a hole in their protein market going into 2020 that I would think food would be one of the last things that they would want to slow down or declare force majeure on.